The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's the Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. The end-of-year holiday season is upon us, and many of us may experience dinner parties, holiday parties, and other get-togethers with family and friends. If you are hosting a festive gathering, or even thinking about hosting, there are ways to ensure that everyone enjoys themselves, even you. Today's show is all about hosting parties. And speaking of hosting, American actress, comedian, and writer Amy Sedaris admittedly has a passion for entertaining. Who better to provide tips and best practices for the time just before the party, during the party, and when it's time to say, party's over, get out, thanks for coming and goodbye. From her book, I Like You, Hospitality Under the Influence, published in 2008, excerpts from the chapters The Art of Hospitality and Hospitality in Action. I love that time before a party when your mind kicks into high gear like a lightning bolt, and you realize the party is quickly approaching, and you still have everything to do, and you're still in bed. This is when I'm at my best. Racing against the clock gives me an adrenaline rush that even my dealer can't provide. This manic energy carries through to the party and often ignites my guests. I call this my TCB, or taking care of business, time. It's important to roll with this feeling, whether it strikes you a week or a minute before the party. You will find that during this period, you will have your most productive moments, allowing valuable breathing room when the party actually arrives. When I get struck with this force, I usually start with cleaning the house, because not only does cleaning have to be done before a party, it is a mindless chore that allows my imagination the chance to run wild. And it's in these moments that I come up with the same old ideas that will make my party original. For some people, this mindless activity might be a walk, or painting a door, or rocking back and forth at a rapid pace. But regardless, letting your imagination loose is the best part of busy work. I always feel grateful to have a sink full of dirty dishes when I'm mad at somebody. It gives me something to do with my hands, which allows me the freedom to imagine all the horrific ways they might catch fire or be set up for a false drug bust that will imprison them forever. I also use this energy to inspire my decorations. I like decorations that are simple and inexpensive. If it's Calabash Seafood Night, maybe I'll put a conch shell in a beach hat and use clamshells for ashtrays. If it's South of the Border Night, I'll get out my tablecloth with donkeys and napping peasants and place a sombrero with a chip-filled brim in the center of the table. I might make flowers out of tissue paper, or cut them out of paper plates and pin them to my curtains or walls, or iron leaves between pieces of wax paper and hang them in my windows. Gift wrap the framed artwork on your walls and rehang them. What's nicer than a wall of presents to look at? For me, a handmade decoration that expresses the theme of the party cannot be beat. Occasionally, when some of my more crafty friends are invited, they will contribute to the party decorations during the party. It makes for a fun party activity. I'm also a sucker for anything with googly eyes, those shakeable eyes that are often attached to puppet skulls or doll heads. I've always said that when I die, I want to be displayed in an open casket with googly eyes replacing my own. Also during this time, I decide what I'm going to wear. I like to think of my outfits more like costumes. Once I step into the role of being a hostess, I want to feel transformed. the perfect outfit will help set the party tone and immediately puts your company in a festive mood. You might want to try on your outfit before the party to make sure it still fits. Your guests should be noticing the rolls on the table, not the rolls on your back. I love aprons. I feel naked without one on. Often, an apron can pull a whole outfit together and hide some of the trouble spots. Not all clothes are appropriate for entertaining. You wouldn't want to wear a bikini when pan-frying pork chops any more than anything with wizard sleeves or flammable when you are serving food on fire, like shish kebabs or Cherry's Jubilee. During my TCB time, I might marinate ribs or pre-roll silverware in a napkin if I'm serving buffet style. I never set the table with valuable silverware because, with the type of friends I have, I can't keep it in the house. I might also prepare a do-ahead dish or clean the rabbit hay box to reduce the ever-present goat smell. I always start making ice in advance and then tub it. I think it's cheating to go out and buy a bag unless it's specialty ice, such as crushed, shaved, or chipped. Nothing depresses me more than an empty ice cube tray. The point is to take advantage of the energy burst you get from the excitement of soon hosting a party. The day of the party. I never dread the day of the party. I'm eager. I can't wait for my company to arrive. Rarely do I have the jitters, because, like a good Girl Scout, which I was until the day they forced me out, I am prepared. I've done all my TCBing, and now I have an entire day to attend to small details and light chores, while still allowing me some time for myself. I take my time bathing, check for lumps, and dress leisurely. The more you've TCB'd it, the better prepared you'll be for the unexpected surprises or disasters that are bound to happen the day of the party. Once, I had a refrigerator break down on Thanksgiving Day. Luckily, I lived in Chicago, and it was cold enough to set everything on the porch. Another time, I had a surprise attack visit from a plumber saying he needed to remove my toilet in order to look for leaks an hour before my guests were to arrive. Then there was the time I planned a party around a Virginia smoked ham from North Carolina, and it never showed up. It still hasn't. I had to run out, and all I could find last minute was a honey-glazed ham, which threw everything else off, especially my side dishes. Sometimes you're the cause of your own mishap. One Easter, I put a deboned leg of lamb in the oven and forgot to turn it on. I was too dressed up to notice. I suppose I cared more about how I looked than how I cooked. When I returned to check on it, the oven was stone cold, and inside rested a sagging, uncooked leg of lamb. The money jar, or entertaining for profit. As I mentioned earlier, I like to make money at my parties. It all started with my funny face club. I would pencil, draw smiley faces on pieces of notebook paper with 25 cents written in the corner and go door to door trying to sell them. I also collected Coke bottles, set up Kool-Aid stands, sang country songs at the airport, and got rid of people's pumpkins, all for the price of 25 cents. Still to this day, there is virtually no situation that comes up that I don't see as a ripe opportunity to make 25 cents. And there is nothing riper than a party. You've got a large group of people, they're liquored up, they are in a giving mood, and they are confined to your home. Cha-ching! Trust me, this involves a lot less legwork than trying to sell pencil drawings of smiley faces door to door. I've come a long way from dragging rotting jack-o'-lanterns into the middle of the street. Today, in order to make 25 cents, my methods are much more refined. They include indoor garage sales, exploiting my rabbit, or selling commercial barbecue sauce repackaged with my face on the label. It is simple to set up an indoor garage sale. Create a display table and make a sign that reads, "Everything must go, 25 cents." And you've got yourself a garage sale. I also place an enamel cup on the table with a smaller 25 cents sign on it so customers have a place to drop a quarter in. I usually customize the for sale items on my table to fit my guests' personalities. Products could include anything from half bottles of fancy lotion, pharmaceutical goods, handmade items, movies, dish detergent, pot holders, matches, lighters, toothbrushes, motel toiletries, used batteries, shells, postcards, tea bags, and any kind of makeshift container for aspirin or vitamins. For those guests who use the excuse, "I really can't buy anything because I'm traveling tomorrow and I don't want any of this stuff in my bag," I offer my cupcakes. If, after being confronted with a cupcake, they use the excuse, "I'm hypoglycemic," then I get angry. Don't put anything on the table that is not for sale. It's annoying. For larger items, I place a box outside my door. This is usually filled with bargains, such bargains as fans, buckets, pillows, vases, frames, fans, pans, handbags, and hospitality books. I personally man the box because it's more about the transaction than the quarter. I try to keep the line moving by putting a limit on browsing, and I'm careful not to be too chatty with each customer. I have three simple rules for shoppers. Rule 1. It has to be a quarter. Can't be 3 nickels and a dime or 2 dimes and a nickel. They are not worth the money they are worth. Rule 2. You breaky, you body. Rule 3. You body, you takey. The point is to get the stuff out of my house. Another great way to make money is the instant camera, a must-have for all parties. You can have your picture taken with my rabbit for 25 cents, couples 25 cents apiece. I make souvenir booklets using construction paper, fold them in half, insert the snapshot on the inside jacket, and personalize the outside. And then, of course, I'll laminate a baby picture or other personal item from your wallet or customize a lighter by wrapping sticky shelf paper around it. First one's free. Ding dong, guests arriving. When I was a waitress, I learned that the most important position in a restaurant is the host. It's the host's job to welcome the guests, and it is often the first thing the guests see. I like to think of my front door as my greeter. For other people, it might be their butler or a bush. I try to make my door inviting. I try to have it speak for me, since I have a limited vocabulary. I want my door to set the tone and give the arriving guest a glimpse into the festivities. For an autumn harvest, I'll put a squirrel surrounded by cutouts of acorns or leaves with my friends' names on them. Or maybe for April showers, I'll make umbrella shapes and rain clouds using cotton balls and string. Sometimes I'll take the eviction notice off my neighbor's apartment door and slap it on my own. Also a good item to have when invited to someone else's home. Even when there's no specific holiday, I have a special knocker and a hand-painted apartment number. Let your door represent you. Once your door swings open, your party has started. This is where your hospitality will shine. Greet each guest with genuine enthusiasm. Give them your full attention. If you are excited, they will be excited. Allow your guests to soak up the environment you have created. There's no need to point things out. They don't need to be made aware of how much work you've done right away. You've got plenty of time to tell them. And don't show it in your appearance either. You must look radiant. No one wants to open the door to a tired, anxious, overworked, raccoon-eyed hostess. It should appear as though you've used witchcraft. The party should seem effortless. If your guests bring a little something-something, make a mental note or discreetly write it down so you can acknowledge it when they are leaving. Let's say Lily brought over ice cream, and I just realized that she has a wandering eye. Now I can associate her wandering eye with the ice cream she brought. I will remember that Lily brought ice cream because I got the scoop on her eye. Simple. If J.D. brought mushrooms and he has a toadstool-shaped mole sprouting from the side of his nose, make a mental note. This way, if you send off a thank you card, you can be specific. Everyone likes to receive a little feedback on gifts, especially if they put a lot of time and thought into them. A thank you card should feel personal, not like a form letter, unless that's the joke. I recently received a thank you letter that read, "I loved all my anniversary gifts, every single one. Thank you so much. They all mean so much to me as you do. Thank you so much." This letter is as vague as my memory of his party. Try and provide a place where people can put their coats once they've arrived. If your place is small, hang them on the shower rod in the bathroom. But be aware of picketers. If you toss garments on the bed or in another room, provide a small mirror, because girls and certain types of men like to take a quick look-see after they've taken off their coats. When introducing people, try to avoid saying something that could be embarrassing, like, "This is Barbara. She can't have children." Or, "Matt's on mood stabilizers." Or, "Lenny just got fired. He was the promotions manager at Knowles." Also, try and avoid introducing people by categorizing them, such as, "He's a dancer at Wagtails." Or, "She's in the outdoor musical The Lost Colony." Or, "He's the guy who found the girl in the well." Give your guests an opportunity to share what they wish to share. Once everyone has arrived, the first 15 minutes are the most important. This often will set the tone for the whole party. You must use constant owl-like behavior in order to monitor how the party is shaping up and intervene when necessary. Occasionally, a party will need a bit of initial poking and prodding. If the energy seems low, work the room. Engage as many people as you can. Bring guests together that you think might enjoy talking to each other. "Alice, you remember Eileen? She was at Riker's the same time you were." Keep the cocktails flowing. Make sure everybody has a fresh beverage and pour heavy. Change the music or the lighting if you feel it will pump up the energy. If your pre-planning is successful, you won't be stuck in the kitchen. Use this time to work the room and enjoy the party yourself. Mingle. It is as important for you to have a good time as it is for your guests. Offer everyone a drink, but don't ask in a way that assumes that they drink alcohol, such as, "Name your poison," or, "How about a cocktail?" This might be awkward for guests who don't drink or alcoholics who are in the program. They hear it in a different way. No one wants to tempt an alcoholic. You don't want that on your shoulders. Create your own special drink that can be served with or without alcohol. That way, nobody will know who is or who isn't drinking. It's more discreet, like medication. Saying goodbye. As a friend's mother once said about a tree her late husband had planted with tenderness and that now stood leafless and brittle, "Daddy's tree, chop it down and drag it to the curb." Thus is the healthy attitude at the end of a party. When it's over, it's over. Pack 'em up and get 'em out. There's no point in dragging out the end, regardless of how successful the beginning and the middle have been. The end of a party is no time for sentiment. You'll have plenty of time to reminisce later. For now, it's time to say goodbye. When the time for farewells comes, don't say your goodbyes in the hallway or on the street. The neighbors might be sleeping. Say them once and make them quick. You don't want to encourage lingerers, stragglers, or carnies. Sometimes I walk them to the elevator to make sure they have left the building, and I double-check the stairwell to make sure they are gone. I don't want them standing outside my door listening to me talking about how they ruined my party. If they brought over a dish, I like to return it that night. If you made money off them, make sure they've paid, and make doubly sure they leave with their on-spot souvenir. Don't start cleaning up while your guests are arriving. Save it for later. I actually love nothing more than doing my dishes after a party because it gives me time to reflect. Time to think of the highlights, the lowlifes, the hits and misses, and the person who fell asleep in my bed. If you have the energy, you can make an entry in your party log, count your quarters, or reform your cheese ball for tomorrow night's party. On the off chance that you have children, don't clean up at all. As children, my brother and sisters and I loved waking up early and playing cocktail party with the leftover debris. As you can tell, those were my first steps in hospitality. Gift giving. Giving a gift can express many things. Congratulations! Get well soon. Remember me? I'm so sorry, it will never happen again. Happy Secretary's Day. Happy graduation. Happy birthday. I didn't mean it. It was the spiced rum talking. The best presents come from the heart and say something simple. I like you. No matter how hard you try, you cannot purchase affection with presents unless you are willing to drop some serious coinage, but you can show thoughtfulness and creativity. Sometimes the way you present a gift, say with genuine enthusiasm, is much more important than the amount of money you spend. Unless, of course, again, you are trying to buy somebody's love. Then it's all about the price tag. Cha-ching! The card you give along with your gift is important in the presentation. Did you just sign your name to a store-bought card? Or did you put a little effort in and make a card from scratch and write a little something personal? Gift wrapping is another chance to make your present unique. My younger brother wrapped all his presents in carpet one Christmas. Some people put very little energy into buying a gift and then use the excuse, "Well, it's the thought that counts." These lazy people tend to give gifts that end up in your hallway stairwell or on your reduced-for-quick-sale display table. They're the same people who start their Christmas shopping on Christmas Eve and don't travel with an address book, any aspirin, or suntan oil. Money can make a nice gift, but once you start sending family members checks for their birthdays, you'll have to do it for the rest of your life because they will be looking for it for the rest of their lives. It's like feeding a dog from the table. A good way to give money is to donate to a charity of the person's choice. When friends say they want to donate money to a charity of my choice, I always suggest my vacation jar. I keep my vacation jar screwed under my kitchen cabinet above the sink, so when I wash dishes, I can stare at it and fantasize about the places I might go and all the ways I can convince people to donate money to it. Re-gifting is tricky. This is when you receive a gift you don't like and then rewrap it and try to pass it on to someone else. Usually it's pretty obvious. Did you really think your aging aunt would appreciate those skates? Or your toothless cousin would enjoy that box of saltwater taffy? Compliments. If you can't afford a gift, give a compliment. This is an easy way to make somebody feel better. If someone gives you a compliment, accept it. Nobody wants to hear, "Don't tell me, tell my gynecologist," or, "Thanks, but you're not exactly the Piedmont Times book review," or, "Oh, please, I just rewired it." If you receive a gift and you don't have something in return, accept it graciously. Nobody wants to hear your backhanded compliments. Thanks for the hook rug you made me. I don't know how you do it, Dale. I couldn't find any time to even think of gifts, what with all the work we're supposed to be doing on the Teasdale project. Well, I guess one of us has been slacking off, and the other one of us has a new hook rug. Note, never bring a gift to an event where the recipient would be stuck carrying it around. They don't want to lug it around any more than you do. It's an inconvenience. If you owe someone money, give them something, even if it's just half the amount, just so the person who lent you the money knows you haven't forgotten your debt. Because trust me, they didn't forget about it. And never buy lenders a gift instead of giving them money. They don't want an expensive journal or a paperweight, and they might not be into charities and scented candles. They want their money. Suggestions for gift giving. Make a list. I like to ask the people I will be giving gifts to for a list of things they desire. We always did this as children. My family still does. And I never understood why people thought it was inappropriate after a certain point. It's helpful, and it prevents you from getting or giving someone a BS present. Lists are good to give to bad shoppers. Just because it's on a list doesn't guarantee anything, so you're still surprised. Also, if you are making a list and giving one to several different people, don't repeat an item on the list. You might want to cater it to the person you are giving the list to. You're not going to ask your 8-year-old niece for a check any more than you're going to ask your 80-year-old grandmother for some chronic and a decent bong, unless her connections are still good. Keep a record of what you have given people in the past so you can refer to it when their birthday rolls around again and you don't give them the same gift. Don't make the mistake of telling people you collect something specific like frogs or Star Trek paraphernalia, because once you do, you'll get them for the rest of your life. Most collectors like to seek things out for themselves. That's the fun of collecting. And try to avoid giving drinkers liquor all the time, because if everybody follows suit, it actually makes them feel bad. Take good care of the person you have listed on a medical form as a contact in case of emergencies, because that's going to be a full-time job for them when that phone call does come. That's all for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any humorous quotes or authors you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number one more time is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.